This morning around the Gospel of John. So if you have your Bibles, John chapter 1, beginning in verse 14 and going to verse 18. John chapter 1, verses 14 to 18. John the Apostle writes, "And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." Part of the challenge of this passage is the challenge of being able to enter into a different place and to be able to relate to those that are there. And so for us going into India, you know, we talk about contextualization. We talk about entering into another place. But the challenge is also for us wherever we live is how do we reflect who Jesus is? And this is Jesus' incarnation. Jesus came into this world and he did so in a way that related to us. And I want to highlight four things that come out of this passage. The first is that the Word became flesh. The second is that Jesus lived among us. The third is that he is full of grace and truth. And the fourth is that he makes the Father known. And behind me is this Easter display of the cross. And Easter is just a couple of weeks ago. And I want to connect the incarnation, Jesus is coming, to what he also did on the cross. Now, John says that the Word became flesh. Flesh refers to what is human, what is natural. Okay, so we're made of flesh. You know, we're embodied, and it often refers to our weaknesses. And for Paul, this was more of a negative piece, where it's our sinful mode of existence, and it's in contrast to the Spirit. So we're to walk by the Spirit, not by the flesh. And for John, it's more positive. It simply refers to being human. So Jesus became flesh. He becomes human. And in that way, Jesus becomes and experiences everything that we experience. He experienced hunger. Okay, so this is, again, our weakness. We become hungry. We need food. He experienced thirst. He experiences a whole range of emotions. He becomes tired. He was tempted just as we are. But the writer in Hebrews says, "We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who in every respect has been tested as we are, yet without sin." And so Jesus became flesh, but was not sinful, but he experienced the weakness of what it means to be human. And so when we enter into the world of India, what we encounter is incredible suffering. We don't take pictures of people who, you know, are suffering, but we see deformities of all kinds. We see illness. We see poverty. Every time we step out our door, we encounter this. We see the suffering that has been inflicted by others, and Sherry shared as she's involved in trying to encourage and support and provide care there. And in so many ways, this is overwhelming. And we ask the question, you know, how can we even be of any help? You know, how can we have any kind of effect against that kind of suffering? And this, the first step I would suggest is that when you encounter suffering like this, is that you identify with it. That you don't sit in an air-conditioned car and drive by, but that you actually respond in some way. You recognize, you empathize with what people are experiencing. You enter into their experience. And it is that shared suffering that enables us to understand. And so while our suffering may look different, we also know what pain is like. We also know what it means to lose people in our lives. We also know what it means to struggle with illness. And it is in that shared suffering that we are able to connect. People do not relate to those who portray themselves, you know, as perfect, as unaffected by suffering or weakness or having all the answers. But as human beings, we connect with each other at a deep level when we share in each other's suffering and pain. And this is what Jesus did. He became flesh. He became weak. He emptied himself of his divine nature and became human being, taking on this form. And it is on the cross that we see that as Jesus is flesh, he suffered and he took his sins upon himself. And it is as a human being that he is able to experience this separation from God on the cross. And it's Peter writes, he bore our sins in his body on the cross. Okay? And we're going to be celebrating communion this morning. You know, the breaking of his body refers to him being flesh. And this is the point of his ability to experience the weight of sin on the cross and to take that sin and bear it as our substitute. And so the question is, you know, we are all flesh, but how do we connect with other people? You know, when you experience, you know, what your neighbors are experiencing, when you see what people are going through, our point of connection is going to be our shared understanding of our weaknesses and our suffering. But we point to Jesus as the one who can offer hope in the midst of that. The second thing that John highlights here is that Jesus lived among us. Literally, it says that he tabernacled or he tented among us. So what it's referring to is that the imagery here is of the Israelites in the desert and that God is with them, but they're living in tents, but God's presence is there among them, in, you know, walking with them, going through whatever they're going through. They're aliens, they're strangers as they're on this journey, they're living in tents, but despite that, God's presence is there. And we know in the New Testament that as believers, we're called aliens and strangers. Our roots here are not that deep. You know, and we know that this life here is temporary. But that doesn't mean we separate ourselves from others. Doesn't mean that we are somehow, you know, distinct and separate. And so we see with Jesus, he came into this world as a first century Jewish male. He was born in Bethlehem. He grew up in Nazareth. He had brothers and sisters. He spoke Aramaic, Greek, Hebrew. He worked as a carpenter with his hands. He travels with his disciples through Galilee, Samaria, Judea. He teaches the crowds with common examples of farming and whatever they are experiencing. He is living among the people. You know, and so we know that we live within our own neighborhoods. And this kind of ordinariness, this, you know, daily life means that there is a presence that we have with those around us. When we live in India, we live in a flat, in a neighborhood, and we share what life entails for everybody that's there. We walk down the street, we greet our neighbors, we greet the woman who, we call her a presswala, that is, she irons the clothes, you know, and we know everybody, we go into the market, you know, I buy vegetables from the same person. We just live among people. We experience the same heat. We experience the water shortages, the power outages. You know, everything that everyone else experiences, we're part of that. We don't separate ourselves from that. And it's in the midst of that that we share what it means to live a life that follows after God. And so the challenge, you know, as we live among people is to recognize that ordinary living is what connects us with others. And again, what points us to back to God who gives life to us. When Jesus died on the cross, as one who lived among us, there is always that possibility of death. And so he dies and he goes away. But in his death, he is able to point to new life, that his death opens up the possibility for something else. And it is not a life that is simply somewhere else, but it is life, new life for us here and now. In Romans, Paul writes that if Christ is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, the spirit is life because of righteousness. If the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will give life to your mortal bodies also through his spirit who dwells in you. As we live among people, God's Spirit is with us, and his presence is now there. And it is through that connection that people can begin to understand who God is. But we have to live among people. We have to be there. We do not separate ourselves from those around. The third thing is that Jesus is full of grace and truth. Grace is found only in this paragraph in the Gospel of John. Now, that may seem a little surprising. It surprised me to find that out, because grace is so prevalent in the New Testament. But grace here is only found here, and it reflects God's mercy and his kindness. Grace represents accepting the unacceptable. Truth is also here. Jesus is full of truth, and truth is a key term in the Gospel of John. But truth is more than a concept. It's not just a fact. It's not just what is true. But Jesus is the truth. So he is the person. Truth is a person. And as a person, as Jesus, truth represents what is steadfast, what is trustworthy, what really is. And so we can put our faith in someone who is true. And so Jesus personifies then the presence of God, and his presence is represented in both grace and truth. Now this challenges us, because in our society and as we relate to people, we may tend to go in one of two directions. We may emphasize truth, you know, and highlight that and leave out grace. And so we say what's true, you know, but can become dogmatic. It can become, you know, in a sense, harsh. On the other end, we could emphasize only grace. And so we are accepting of, you know, others. We are tolerant, you know, and we leave out truth. And it's fascinating that the gospel writer says Jesus is full of grace and truth. Both. And in some ways, you can't separate these two. And it's not just a little bit of each. He's full of grace and he's full of truth. In Ephesians, Paul writes, "Speaking the truth in love, we must grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ." Now, our English translation here uses the language of speaking the truth. Paul actually doesn't use the word speaking. He's using truth as a verb, and he says truthing in love. And our English doesn't, you know, have truth as a verb, so we can't communicate that. So our translations go elsewhere. But really, you know, we truth in love. And so we are steadfast people. We are people who are faithful. We are people who point to what is real, you know, but we do so in love and grace. And we show what God is like. And it is on the cross that grace and truth are most fully expressed. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." This is the way to God, is through Jesus. But it is an expression of such profound grace and love that we see on the cross, and we recognize that God has given up everything, you know, to demonstrate who he is. Finally, John says that Jesus makes the Father known. John clearly states that no one has ever seen God. And in our world, people want proof. They want something that's visible, you know. And so we hear the atheists, you know, who are deriding Christians, you know, because, you know, well, there is no God. How do we know? And John, you know, really upfront says no one has ever seen God. Because we cannot take, or, you know, God the Spirit cannot be reduced into a physical form. We cannot reduce God into something that we as created beings can see. And yet here is the wonder of the incarnation, is that God himself reduces himself to human form and becomes someone that we can see and relate to and understand. So he empties himself to become that. And Jesus now, in human form, explains who God is. He makes the Father known. And it's like a light in the darkness. All of a sudden you see for the first time, well, this is what God is like. And he reveals God in a way that has never, ever happened before. So no one has seen God, but now Jesus makes the Father known. So in India, we're living in a world that is full of idols. We're living in a world where Hinduism is the primary religion. And idols, in my experience here in North America, have always been kind of academic or abstract, you know, like, oh yes, of course, the ancient Israelites worshipped or struggled with worshiping idols, and, you know, Paul said, don't sacrifice food to idols, and, you know, and I know we have elements in our life that are idols, that there is the power of that within our world, but it's not visible in that way. And when we're in India, it's there everywhere. every taxi we get in, every store we go into, on the street corners, there are idols. And there is a power that is present there. And so how do you reveal the one true God into that mix, into that context? And the key, I think, here is what John says, that Jesus was close to the Father's heart. Jesus was close to the Father's heart. What does it mean to be close to someone's heart? As you think of your friends, your family, it means you understand them. You know how they feel. You know how they would respond. You know what they're thinking. And so when we look at Jesus and we see that he is moved with compassion for the crowds, well, this is how God the Father responds. When we see Jesus is angry with corruption, this is how God the Father responds. When we see he has tears when he encounters pain and death, this is how the Father responds. And so to explain the Father's heart is to respond in the same way that the Father would respond. And it is reflecting God's character. And so Jesus, being close to the Father's heart, is able to reveal him to us. Now, this call comes back to us. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul says, "Therefore be imitators of God as beloved children, and live in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." We are to imitate God. And our call is also to make him known. And we do that by revealing God's heart, you know, by understanding his own heart. We mentioned in Sunday school that we have this elderly widow who is our neighbor below us. Radhika is her name. She's in her mid-70s. We see her regularly throughout our week. And in the last number of months, she's been saying to us, "God has brought you here to help me." And we say, "Yes, he has." you know, she's Hindu, you know, her understanding of God is not exactly what we understand. But in our minds, you know, as we are there living among, or living in a sense with her, we want to make the Father known through how we interact with her, how we love her, how we care for her, because this is how God the Father wants to respond. And so as we look at Easter and we look at the cross, this is where where Jesus reveals God most fully. It is in response to human sin and rebellion, and in the face of rejection, that God's character shines through. It's at this point that he sends his son to die on the cross. It is at this point he demonstrates his love. It is not coercive, it is open-handed, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And so God's love is revealed among us, John writes, in this way, that God sent his only son into the world so that we might live through him. And in this love, not that we loved God, but he loved us and sent his son to be an atoning sacrifice for our sins. And so it is as we love one another, as we reveal God's heart, this is how people know who God is, and this is how we make God known. So Jesus leaves us now an example with his incarnation. He leaves the example of being flesh, of living among us, of being full of grace and truth, and of making the Father known. And so we're also called to explain God, to reveal who God is, and this is the gospel. This is the good news, that this is the God who loves everyone. And how do people know that? Except through those that live among them and who share in their suffering and pain, but can point to a God who is full of grace and truth and who offers new life through his death and resurrection.